Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 189. Science Faction, the hominids.
This is bullshit. Once again, we brushed by euphemisms for dong.
We have. This is our new intro bit. I'm so excited. This is probably the one I'm most excited about doing. This is my personal area of expertise. This is the thing that I was super excited to go off and study in college and something that kind of sparked my interest in science in general my entire life. The evolutionary history of human beings and especially of the hominid lineage. So every week for the next couple weeks, we will be covering a new hominid species starting all the way at the most basal that we can think of.
You're just trying to get more interest in paleontology.
That's true. I am in human paleontology. I absolutely
dinosaurs
think there should be more. No, God damn it, no.
I have a question. Which fan submitted this idea? Because we actually did have legit submissions.
Right, we did.
And it seems like you're just brushing past them.
No, I did get a legitimate submission.
Not on the Twitter feed, I'll tell you that.
It was from my wife.
It's bullshit.
She's a fan, so it counts.
Sounds like nepotism.
Yeah, it actually is. Hey, listen, we live in a country where the president can just decide his family is part of the government. I can do this.
So you condone it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Perhaps this is why our fans didn't really participate in the poll, because it's like voting against Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Like what's going to happen?
This, I am super excited about this. This is a subject I think people should know more about. And let's start with what a hominid is, just that name hominid. Now, what's really interesting is if you ask scientists what a hominid is, it depends when they went to school as to how they will answer you. Because hominid, the definition of which, has changed over time. Hominid used to just be us, Homo sapien, and the rest of the Homo lineage, all of our ancestors that were still in what we consider the Homo genus. But recently, it has been kind of expanded to be all of those extant relatives, including Australopithecus, all those other ones, and even the great apes.
So they should call it heteronids now.
Heteronids! We include things like chimpanzees, gorillas, and depending on who you're talking to, maybe even orangutans within the group of hominids. Now, the other group that we just think of as the direct ancestors of human beings in the Homo lineage, we now have a different name we call hominins. So that is that slight differentiation. You will hear me say hominin or hominid sometimes. That is the differentiation, if you've ever wondered. But if we want to go all the way back, we got to start at the most basal one that we have. And that takes us all the way back 7 million years ago to Sahelanthropus chadensis.
Was this one a homophone?
Yeah, it also was the same name as another one that turned out to be a squirrel.
Perfect.
Yeah, no. Now, what's really interesting about this is one of the few ones that we're going to talk about where we don't actually even know if it's on our lineage or directly related to anyone on our lineage. This could even be like an early proto-gorilla for all we know. This is probably after the split with gorillas, but before the split with chimpanzees. We think, we're not 100% sure, 7 million years ago, it's right around that time period where we split with chimps, so we're not 100% sure.
You can always tell the proto-gorilla from the regular gorilla, because the proto-gorilla, huge genitals.
Gigantic balls. This particular species lived in the country that is now Chad, which is in north central Africa, as opposed to where most of the species we're going to talk about come from, which is going to be east or south Africa. So this is kind of an outlier, probably because it's so old. Very, very interesting species that we know from just three sites that basically probably show us one or maybe two individuals. We have almost a full skull that was very interestingly deformed by the fossilization process, and the only reason we can kind of see what it looks like now is because of the use of laser scanners, where we can actually laser scan all the different fossil remains and then use digital software, CAD software, to kind of mold it back into what it actually looked like. It is very cool. You can go take a look at this skull. We'll have a picture of it on our website. This is 7 million years ago, again from Chad. It might be bipedal. It might not. We do not know that, if it was an upright walking ape or not. And the reason is, the way we tell is usually below the neck bones, and we don't have any of that. All we have is post-cranial fossils, meaning the skull and stuff around it. And you can sometimes tell with the skull because of something called the foramen magnum, which is the hole that the spine goes up to the bottom of the skull, or the teeth and the jaw, which also account for that. Because this skull is a little twisted, a little messed up, and we're not 100% sure, we can't say for sure. Some paleoanthropologists think it was a bipedal upright walking ape. Some think it's not. Some think it's halfway in the middle. We are not sure on this one.
Couldn't we solve this by cloning, or is it too old?
No, there is no genetic evidence. These are just fossils at this point. There is no living tissue within that.
What if you just put in some frog DNA?
If we put in a little bit of frog DNA and then put it in a teleporter with Jeff Goldblum, we could probably recreate it.
Jeff Goldblum's The Fly is to you what Jurassic Park's Jeff Goldblum is to me.
Life finds a way.
It always finds a way.
It does.
This had a small brain case, only about 320 to 380 cc's, which is about what a chimp is. Actually, maybe even a little smaller in some cases, depending on the chimp. And so it's a small brain case. It is nowhere near us, Homo sapien, who have a brain case that are around 1350 to sometimes 1450 cc's. So we are talking about a very ancient ancestor. Don't think of this as using any tools, using any fire. This is an ape in every sense of the word. This is probably an ape that is not as capable as modern-day chimpanzees or bonobos.
I mean, it's just a woman, right?
Oh. Seb just likes alienating half the listenership.
Exactly. You know what? Dr. Ava is just itching for an MMA fight. She wants a McGregor versus...
It's just too easy. How can you resist?
Again, we don't know for sure if it's within our lineage, if it's in a different ape lineage, if maybe all of its relatives, all of its descendants are now extinct and it's in nobody's lineage. We don't know yet. We'll hear creationists sometimes say, oh, all those hominid fossils you think you have of Neanderthals, those are just apes. Those are just gorillas.
No, they were put there by the devil.
They were put there by the devil as gorilla skulls. On all of those, they are wrong, especially when you get into the Homo lineage.
Not the devil.
On this, they could be right, though, because this very well could be a proto-gorilla. This could be on a different lineage and not be related to us whatsoever. This is so far back, we know very little about it, but it's still very intriguing, especially that it's nowhere near the other fossils that are later on in our lineage.
If the devil put those bones there, then explain ape hell.
I feel like ape hell is just a bunch of bananas dangled right out of reach. And like poo that's impossible to throw.
It's all just diarrhea, and like it just goes right through their hands.
Very, very cool stuff, and we will be covering a different hominid species every week from now on. And speaking of hominid species, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing terrible. A tyrant just stole the vote, and revolution is coming.
Yeah. Okay, just stick to your Bernie Sanders bullshit over there. All right, and of course, our scientist for the afternoon, Seb. How are you doing, Seb?
Hot.
Yes,
really
it is
hot in here.
It is warm in here, and
we could have healthcare on this podcast if we overthrew him.
And of course, we are broadcasting this super hot podcast from the Madhouse Comedy Club along the skyline of beautiful downtown San Diego. And when you're not coming to Madhouse to check out their Saturday Night Showcase, go ahead and check out our website at www.thesciencefaction.com for all the articles we cover here, as well as some we didn't get to. The full set of the Flat Earth Debate is now up on that website as well, if you want to go check that out. But for now, let's move right on to science. Articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, pork causes hep E while bag ban might cause hep A.
It's kind of a wordy title. I'd have shortened it. Brevity is the soul of wit.
Yeah, he'd be a great editor. Yeah, indeed. So let's start with the first one. We're actually combining two science stories here, two interesting ones. The first one is talking about hep E, hepatitis E, maybe coming from pork in England.
Hepatitis E, that sounds like a joke you'd make about me fucking animals or something. I feel like that's a punchline you've thrown away.
That's hepatitis D, actually. So when we talk about hepatitis, that word actually is just talking about damage to your liver. It's not actually a thing.
But hep E is good for the skin, right?
Yeah, you got to get that good hep E on you. But hepatitis, when you hear hepatitis A, B, C, D, or E, you're actually referring to a virus that impacts your liver. So those are two kind of differentiations to make in your mind. You can get hepatitis just by drinking a lot and causing damage to your liver through cirrhosis. It's just a
drinking
condition that
alcohol.
Your liver in. Yes. Yes, or actually some forms of herbal tea that damage your liver. But the hepatitis A, B, C, D, or E are actually different versions of a virus, and this virus can cause a lot of problems. The most problematic is probably hepatitis C. An easy way to remember this is the middle hepatitises from A to E, if you think of the middle ones, B, C, and D, are all ones that you get through blood, saliva, bodily fluid contact. You can get from sex, it's an STD. In fact, hep C is one of the worst STDs that are running rampant throughout the population and we don't do a lot of stuff for, because it can kill you and it's pretty dangerous.
But it's good for scurvy.
No, that's vitamin C, Seth. Oh. Well, it is kind of good for scurvy, though, too, because it'll kill you, and then you no longer have scurvy.
If you find out somebody has hepatitis C, and they're a modern American, let's say.
Pamela Anderson has hepatitis C.
Can you assume that they got it from ass to mouth? Like, there's really...
No. You can get this, unlike the other ones, you can get these from sexual transmitted diseases, so you can get this just from having regular sex. Now, the bookends of this, hepatitis A and hepatitis E, they actually usually come from unsanitary conditions, like you're talking about, like ass to mouth. Like, if you get fecal matter within your or water system. That's the most common way that these go. Now, because of that, hepatitis A and hepatitis E are most likely associated with third world countries. We have big outbreaks of hepatitis E in different third world countries that end up killing a lot of people. Usually they won't kill you if you're in otherwise healthy conditions, but because they're in a place where they're already eating the shit water, probably not super healthy, that's why they're dying. So the National Institutes of Health in the UK was super surprised to start seeing a bunch of hepatitis E coming out in the UK, and they decided to do a study and see if they could find out where it's coming from. In doing this study, they noticed something. Almost all the people in this hepatitis E cluster shopped at one supermarket. And because they found out that pork from this one supermarket came from outside of the EU, where stuff is a little bit more regulated, and outside Great Britain, where stuff is a little bit more regulated, they found out that, wait a second, we think this is actually coming in on pork from this one supermarket, meaning these people come here, get their food, go home, and get a horrible disease, a horrible virus, that, while is unlikely to kill them because of their general health of the area, could theoretically kill you.
So are they... Is the pork becoming infected at the supermarket, or is
no.
it sourced from infected?
Good, and this is a good question. It's likely sourced from an infected place, but here's the thing. They don't know. They don't even know that it's coming from the pork. They don't even know it's coming from the supermarket. They are doing a correlational analysis at this point and saying, listen, here are all these people. Think of them like the end of a wheel, and the spokes on the wheel all lead to the middle, and the middle is that supermarket. There's no other connection we can find with them. It doesn't mean for sure it's that supermarket, and this might be the worst case of slander in UK history, but for now, they think that's where it's coming from.
How do they know it's not coming from their poor dental hygiene?
Like they get poo in their mouth, or...
Well, have you seen British people's
Oh,
teeth?
That's true. That is true.
I kind of have a theory supporting Sab. I think, what if you could just interview the butcher at the supermarket? You might be able to solve it right there.
Hello there. I'm the one butchering these hogs. Of course I don't be washing me hands after I use me restroom.
I don't want to get soap on the meat.
I only crap on me hands. Sometimes I do.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting what might be causing this, where it might be from. You know, it is interesting that this is a particular supermarket that imports their pork, and that is from outside the UK, so that very well might be it. Hopefully they figure this out and they can stop that, because that would really suck. I mean, you're not talking about some little market in the back of, you know, middle of nowhere. You're going to Vons, you're going to Ralph's, you're going to Safeway. You're buying meat you think is safe. You're coming home in a first world country, and you're catching a third world disease. That's a shitty system, and the question becomes, would that happen here in the U.S.? Short answer, it could. Long answer, almost certainly not. Because we have much different requirements in terms of where we bring our meat in. Most of our meat is local, is grown from here. The stuff we bring in is actually usually more scrutinized by the FDA than the stuff that is actually grown here in the States. So you would probably have a very, very good chance of catching that. On top of that, our food standards vis-a-vis the FDA are much higher. Things are tested much better. It is unlikely we would have that here. However, there is something else going on. In the same city we are all sitting in, actually technically literally less than a mile from where we are recording this podcast, which is another version, the hepatitis A, which again, if you remember from the bookends thing, is one of those poo hepatitis, one of the poo hepatitises, is having a huge outbreak in San Diego County, specifically in the homeless population in downtown San Diego, where the Madhouse Comedy Club is located. And this huge hepatitis outbreak is so widespread, it has actually killed 14 people. To put that in perspective, hepatitis A generally kills around 8 people per every 1,000 infected, though in people with poor health, it can be as high as 17 per 1,000 infected. So we are looking at least probably 1,000 infections to see this death rate.
And it's really sad because those people were set to live for 2, maybe even 8 more years.
Yeah, right. We have a huge homeless problem here in San Diego. There's entire blocks that are essentially dedicated to tent cities of homeless people living here. Almost none of them are from here, though. They actually get imported in here. What happens is if you're in a small town in the Midwest, they'll literally buy you a bus ticket if you've got schizophrenia and be like, you're not our problem anymore. Have fun in
a
place where you can be.
It's a good place to be homeless.
Yeah, you can be outside all day, all year long. There's no snow.
Do we, like, send back our rednecks? Like, what do we do?
I like that. I like that. Go out to the boondocks and take some of the white trash people and send them back that way. Good exchange program.
You could have a gun. Nobody will arrest you for having a grenade launcher. Go over there.
And this is spreading throughout the homeless population. And now it's getting outside of the homeless population. And we're actually having huge drives to get all food workers get the vaccination for hepatitis A. It's so much so that we're even like, hey, guess what? If you can't afford it, you don't have health insurance, the county will now pay for you if you're a food worker to go get a hepatitis A vaccine to stop the spread. people have been wondering, why this sudden explosion?
And where, why are so many food workers drinking from the same source as homeless people?
Right, yeah.
Like, why are they still like, well, they're like a dog walking by a stream, like, oh, I'm thirsty, let's just lap up a few lips.
Yeah, just homeless fecal matter floating by. Well, people have been thinking, why is this going on? Why is this sudden explosion of hepatitis A outbreaks in San Diego? Nobody knows for sure. This is not a scientific argument. But one postulation that's been put forth that's really interesting is that it is correlated with a bag ban that has come around here in San Diego recently. We have stopped selling or giving away free plastic bags at the supermarket. Now, if you want to get a bag at the supermarket, you either have to get paper or you can pay to get a compostable plastic alternative bag as opposed to getting a free series of like 100 little shitty plastic bags. It's actually done really well for our litter. We have way less of those bags floating around on the street, on the freeways, on that kind of stuff. But the downside is, as people have been pointing out, for the past 10 years, the homeless population has been using these plastic bags as like a portable bathroom. They literally poo in them and then throw them away. Now that those bags are less prevalent and you have to pay for them to get them, they're not going to do that. They're pooing in more public places that then infect the water supply and reinfect other homeless people. It might be a plastic ban-based hepatitis A outbreak.
That homeless people pick up their own poop should make any asshole who doesn't pick up after his dog feel that much worse about himself.
That schizophrenic dude is picking up human feces and you can't pick up your dog poo.
Asshole. Shame.
Damien, you had a good idea before the show. You said we just start putting out more of those like doggy bag dispensers in the homeless neighborhoods so that they can start using those and maybe we can stop the outbreak.
I say we have some homeless parks where they're just allowed to poop on the grass. There's the stations, you know, they're in the really shitty parts of town.
It's better than your other, your first idea was just the purge, right? That was what you were going to have, the purge, make it all crime legal for the day. Everybody attacks the homeless people once a year.
We are slowly heading towards a purge society. I'm just saying, let's get it over with. Let's do it.
Very, very interesting. I'm interested to see where this goes. I want to see better epidemiological research to show where both of these outbreaks are coming from, because right now they're both a little bit mysterious. But if we do pin them down, hopefully we can do some work and try and fix them.
For those of you who may not know San Diego, but we have a big problem on this place called Seal Beach, where basically the seals are environmentally protected, but they're crapping up a storm. And so the city spends thousands upon thousands of dollars to every week spray all this seal feces with this bacteria that eats it. The city values seal poop more than it values homeless poop.
Right. Well, to be fair, Seal Beach is in the richest part of San Diego. These homeless people are all pooing in poor parts of downtown.
And
so it all
whatever they're doing isn't working very well because that beach smells horrible.
That's what they need to spray it more often.
You can't even like go like 100 yards from it. I can't even breathe around there.
Is there an animal that eats poop that we could employ?
Mongoose. We'll get a mongoose in to hunt the seal poop.
It's a very unhappy mongoose.
What about those foxes that were...
Yeah, that's right. The Channel Island foxes. Good point, Seb. I know they eat human poo. Maybe they eat seal poo, too.
Can we, like, sprinkle rabbit meat on the poo and just...
Seals are the humans of the water. All right, on to article number 2, energy-producing yarn. I love this one. Those of you who know me know that I love alternative energy forms. I love anything where we can produce energy in different ways. I like it especially if it could be some kind of local power generation facilities.
You sound very new agey right now.
Maybe.
Alternative energy.
I think I'm more just practical. Like, I want to go build a cabin out in the woods and not have any power lines going to it. You know, and it seems to me like it's silly that we do this kind of power generation thing in massive scales off someplace else and then lose a shit ton of power due to line loss by sending it someplace else.
If you just hang a triangle over your head, the energy from the triangle will project.
Oh, pyramid power? It has to be a whole pyramid set. Don't be an idiot.
For those who can't afford the pyramid, you get the triangle.
You know, like you cast a spell like most tyrants do, who fix elections and whatnot.
Yeah.
You cast this spell. I want everybody to know that they should question everything this man says, all of his views. Mm-hmm. This man doesn't believe in free elections. How do we know that traditional energy isn't the better course and this is state-run media?
Yeah, I love the idea of getting off the grid in every way possible and not having to be hooked into somebody else. I like that idea of independence of an energy sort as well. And what this new discovery does, it's a really, really neat idea. So they took carbon nanotubes, which we've talked about before. It's essentially an entire string, a spaghetti string or a straw made of carbon. And you can use these to essentially become superconductors. And in part of the way that this works is you can weave these into a yarn, which is what these researchers did. They literally took a bunch of carbon nanotubes and wound them around each other until they're an intertwined type yarn. Now you have this string, and because they're all wound up, it kind of does what a rubber band does when a rubber band is twisted. You know how a rubber band clumps together when it's twisted? Mm-hmm. That's what this yarn naturally does. Every time you stretch it out from that twisted position, you produce electricity. They have made similar things to this before. However, the reason this is so neat, the reason this is so novel and useful is the power generation has started to become real. Before, it was such small amounts of power that it was essentially useless. Now we're talking about the idea that this type of stuff, in very small quantities, can produce a relatively usable amount of electricity.
But aren't the sweaters that come from this yarn abnormally itchy? I mean...
Well, here's the problem. Grandmas aren't using the right type of knitting needles, and they're breaking the yarn as they're doing it.
Putting it off on the grandmas, yeah, because they don't know shit about needling.
Oh, yeah, right? Well, what's funny is they actually do want to make clothes out of this. One of the biggest industries they see coming up is energy-generating textiles, meaning you make your clothes out of this material. You walk around. As you're walking around, your kinetic movement, unbunching and bunching up those yarn threads, actually powers up your cell phone or charges some device that you have.
So we could have a GIMP suit that would power the probe attached to his testicles.
Yeah, the GIMP.
Like we could, it's he could punish himself.
It's the old, can God make a rock big enough he can't move? Can they make a GIMP suit with enough power generation to move the vibrating device that is sexually stimulating him?
It's a great theological argument, Bobby.
So these are super, super neat, and they're doing some very interesting stuff. They took super, super small ones, ones that are essentially the weight of a mosquito, and in stretching them out, they were able to do something small, like power an LED. Now, LEDs don't need a lot of power, so it's not a whole lot. But what does that mean? That means that for something like a street light, you wouldn't need much power generation. You could have something like a swinging pendulum made of this stuff that would constantly go up and down that would might generate enough power to
it
power something like a street light.
Constantly go up and down.
Constantly go back and forth, sorry.
No, but I mean, you'd have, something would have to keep
yeah.
it going.
Well, like things like wind. You know, you'd have the wind kind of move this hanging thing around, yeah. and it would just give it a very slight amount of movement would provide enough power. You could have things like clothes that power things. Even
the great thing is, if you're waiting at the stoplight, uh-huh. you'll probably get clocked in the head.
There you go. You can even attach this. Now, those of you who know a little bit about physics know that usually when you heat something up, it expands. So you can use this to change thermal energy into electricity, which is always a good holy grail because we waste a lot of energy through thermal output. We lose a lot to heat, including in your car and things like that. Imagine your entire car, your exhaust system, which gets very, very hot, is lined with a substance that expands as it heats up. These yarns are stretched across that substance. It expands. It pulls these yarns taut. Every time that exhaust system heats up or goes down, you produce a certain amount of electricity.
Does it wear? Like, after 2 years, do I need to get a new...
Well, we don't know, because it literally was just invented last month. So we don't know yet the longevity, but carbon nanotubes have shown to essentially be immortal in the sense that unless you actually damage them, cause damage to them, they're not going to decay in any way. So who knows if the electrical generation would be the same.
Are they combustible?
It's carbon, so I would imagine at some level it's combustible.
Like, if you had it on your exhaust system, it wouldn't. If you had it on your exhaust system,
well, you would have it over the coating that expands or contracts. So I don't know what their thermal
like
properties
how hot
are.
Can you get it?
Yeah,
before
that's a very good question, and I don't know that answer. But you can even do things like tidal generation, which is also something I've always wondered why they don't do more of. You tie one of these things to the bottom of the ocean. You tie it on an anchor at the bottom, and then you have a balloon or a float or a buoy tied to the top. The tide comes in and out. It moves it up and down, and now you're generating a whole bunch of electricity. All this stuff is super interesting. And it's not just interesting for the idea that you're going to power your house, because quite frankly, we have probably gotten to the point or are getting to the point where you're going to be able to do that with household generation. You could already do that with a Tesla roof. You can already do that with solar photovoltaic. You can already do that with personal windmills and a power wall put in your house. You can do all of that. What's really interesting about this is you have the generation of power where you need it. Let's say you want cell phone towers out in the middle of the ocean. You put one of these things on a buoy, you're constantly generating electricity on that buoy. You have a cell phone tower. You have a light beacon. You have whatever you want. You can have portable things out in the middle of the nowhere generating their own power that allow us to do anything like connect to Wi-Fi, that allow us to find where we are, to see signal lights, whatever it is. You generate the power where you need it.
This sounds like electricity that the Amish would adopt because it requires work. Like, so
when
you're churning butter, like, it feels like, oh, English, we...
Yeah, like how they use like diesel or steam motors, but they won't use other things. Yeah, I like that idea.
They do?
Yeah, they accept technology up to a certain point. Like they have big workshops.
They use motors, like diesel motors?
It might be diesel, it might be steam. They definitely use steam. Like, so they have entire workshops that are powered by like fan belts running off a single motor that is considered acceptable for them to use. It's not like they won't use any technology. They like literally drew a line. They're like, 1830, this is where we stop. This is the line.
Oh, so it's like by year.
Yeah.
There's like a point, all right...
That it's determined, like, you can use technology that is up to this point.
Is this the same technology? I've heard of the carbon fiber armors, and just, is it really strong, or is this a different type of weaker carbon fiber?
I mean, the carbon nanotubes are incredibly strong. It's not carbon fiber. This is a different thing. These are incredibly small scale. So while they would be very, very strong for their size, similar to like spider webs, they would not necessarily be like unbreakable. You know, you can rip through a spider web pretty easily.
If we were to make a shirt of it, would it be an easily rippable shirt?
That's a good question. I think it would be very difficult to rip this. Certainly much more difficult than cotton, just because a carbon nanotube itself is much stronger on that level.
Could be good motorcycle armor, bro.
I would be, yeah. And it could like power your black backup lights or something like that as you're going.
Getting enough carbon nanotubes to make a whole shirt is, well, I don't know.
But they used to say that about nylon. You know, they used to say,
like, to get just a little bit of carbon nanotubes, you have to like have tons of carbon just to get a tiny bit.
But they used to say that about nylon. When they first developed nylon, they're like, this is great, it's amazing, it's super strong, but you can never make rope from it because it would cost $30,000 for a foot of rope for us to do it. It's like, yeah, but eventually we catch up, you know? It's not like carbon is a rare commodity. It'd be one thing if it was cobalt, and we're like, I don't know if there's enough cobalt on the world to do this. It's another thing when it's a substance that we just have to figure out how to process better.
Like turn people into it.
Burning people alive will make a lot of carbon.
This might be what you have your clothes made out of in the future. It might be what's powering a lot of the future devices you see around. It might be what's charging up your cell phone as you walk around in the future. Super, super interesting. Again, one of those steps towards energy independence where we can finally cut the lines and be off the grid. Always very, very neat. Let's move right on to everybody's favorite game. I call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
Is your wife also the only person who says, I really like this game?
She keeps asking when you're going to win one. That's what she
asked. I won last week.
Are you sure?
I don't remember. And you stole a victory from me as
no,
well.
No, I don't think that happened. That doesn't sound right.
Seb, you were there. You could witness it.
I do not recall.
Yeah,
Judas!
I think you're the only one in on this, Damien.
All right.
I
came for the Damians. I was silent.
I call BS the game where I read 4 science news articles, and my panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS. Are you guys ready to play?
I am ready for my flagellation on this show, yes.
It's pronounced flatulence.
We're ripping them this whole match.
All right, follow along at home and see how you guys do. Article number 1. Researchers believe that cheese changed the shape of the human skull. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This sounds believable because everybody I know who eats a lot of cheese looks down their nose at me.
Okay. Maybe it's all the flatulence, but okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am who I am.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say science.
All right, and Seb?
Well, they say you are what you eat, and the skull has a bunch of holes in it, and so does Swiss cheese, so yes.
We're all science. Packers fans. Yeah. All right, article number 2. New research suggests that naturally high levels of lithium in drinking water may be causing mental problems in human populations. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science, and I'm going to have to go with my boy Alex Jones here. It's fluoride.
Oh, okay, fair enough. You know, it could be both. They're not mutually exclusive.
Listen, I've put a lot of stock into this fluoride thing, and if it's wrong, I've there's a lot of my personality.
You're going down with the ship.
Exactly.
And Seb.
Is there any lithium in water?
Yes, there is. There is naturally occurring.
Oh, there is?
Similar to fluoride, there's naturally occurring lithium in water, and it varies depending on
don't
where you are.
Don't they give lithium like to people with mental disease as a cure? So how would it be causing mental disease?
You tell me.
I'm going to go with bad science.
All right. Article number 3. Researchers have confirmed an interesting phenomenon in which people who are asked a question in a second language show more empathy than if asked in their native language. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. People are extremely xenophobic. There's no way they don't empathize well with foreigners.
Okay, fair enough. And Seb?
It's always something that's true and there's some little tiny thing that's not actually correct.
Why do you think you're the scientist I beat?
I'm trying to...
Bobby's laugh was implicit, was implying that he knows of what I'm talking about when he implies my victories.
It's because I'm trying to beat Bobby.
Never! The retard. Don't beat the game master,
Never.
The dungeon master.
I think it's probably science, but it's probably bullshit science.
They got
the results,
okay.
But they're not good at doing their... They didn't do proper statistics.
All right, and lastly, article number 4. Researchers are now conducting a large-scale study to see if you understand whale language. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science because everybody knows whales speak the international language of love and are very reciprocal.
Yeah, you have done some bad stuff to blowholes, and that's why you're not allowed at SeaWorld anymore. All right, and Seb.
Well, I was going to say bad science, but then he mentioned international language. But it's not love. International language is English, and we all speak English.
So that's true.
We do understand them.
But do whales speak English?
Of course.
Okay. So, Seb, you are
national language.
So you are saying true.
Yes.
Okay.
This is bullshit. He's because I've beaten him in the past, he's mimicking my strategy of absurdity.
All right. Let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. Researchers believe that cheese changed the shape of the human skull. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. And actually not that surprising when you think about it. We can tell a lot about what different hominids ate just from the teeth shape and also from the skull shape, because the muscles that you use to chew actually attach to your skull in different points. If you're chewing really hard stuff, the muscles are really, really big and thick, and likewise, their connection points become thick on the skull. So we have something called the sagittal crest, which runs down the center of the skull of things like gorillas, which have big, giant chewing muscles. Our ancestors had that crest. We no longer do. The top of our skull is flat because we don't have these giant chewing muscles attaching there.
That's why my mouth gets tired when I eat beef jerky.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Things like jaw shape. Jaws are big and thick in animals that do a lot of heavy chewing. The zygomatic arches, which are just under your eyes, they're kind of what we call cheekbones that stick out. They're there to add leverage, so they get bigger if you need more leverage to bigger chewing muscles. When we moved from a diet of hunter-gatherers, where you're doing a lot of heavy chewing of nuts, tubers, roots, that kind of stuff that you find, to something soft like cheese and dairy, where you're not doing a lot of heavy chewing, the muscles literally change. And it doesn't have to be even an evolution thing. It can literally be whether or not you during your lifetime are doing this. And if not during your lifetime you're not doing heavy chewing, you won't have those big, thick, heavy attachment points. This work comes out of Davis, where they actually looked at different skulls of different groups of people based on the type of culture they were in, and showed that if you were in a place that went from hunter-gatherers to dairy, there were changes in the skull that represent these chewing muscles basically atrophying and going down. Very, very interesting stuff, because it means that later on we can use this data. If we find a random skeleton, if we find a random bone, if we find Ötzi up in the Alps, in the Italian Alps, and we want to know about his culture and where he was living, and we don't have any other evidence, we can literally take data points from his skull and be able to start saying, well, it looks like he lived in a very dairy-based society, or agriculture-based society, or hunter-gatherer society.
So is that less chewing or more chewing?
Less chewing for dairy, because you're getting most of your calories either from cheese or milk or something soft.
So if I saw a woman with very prominent cheekbones, like, mm-hmm. Very masculine yeah. cheekbones, like I could justify it instead of saying I'm gay to my friends. Uh-huh. I could say, I like a woman who can chew, bro.
Exactly. That's exactly
it
correct.
Means she eats a lot of leaves.
Yeah.
With her steroids.
All right. Article number two. New research suggests that naturally high levels of lithium in drinking water may be causing mental problems in human populations. Both of you guys thought this one was false, and this one is bad science. Seb nailed it on the head. We do give lithium to people to start to mellow out bipolar disorder. It's actually a very effective medication, one of the only medications, and Radiolab does a great entire episode on this you can go check out, where it's basically an element. Lithium is just an element on the periodic tables. We literally give you a pure element, and it helps people who have very severe bipolar. We don't even know exactly how it works, but we know it does.
What about arsenic?
No, that would not work as much as it would kill you. I mean, in the end, that solves bipolar.
You're
so
no longer bipolar.
You know what? Arsenic or lithium.
Dead people are very emotionally stable.
That's true.
I don't want to deal with a bipolar person, so...
So what's actually funny is this is another one of those correlational studies, but it's really, really interesting. This comes out of Denmark, and what they did is they looked at 73,000 people with dementia and 733,000 people without it. So these are gigantic N numbers for any kind of study. The scientists from the University of Copenhagen then tested the water from the 15 areas of the country for what level of lithium they had. They found a very strong correlation that showed that people with the highest levels of lithium in the tap water were 70% less likely to develop dementia, suggesting that adding lithium to tap water could be a way of preventing the disease. Now, dementia is not bipolar. This is a whole different thing. This is saying that this particular substance might actually help you with a different disease, and it might help prevent dementia. Now, we got to always say the age-old thing, causation, correlation. This might be a correlation. Maybe people who live in areas that have high lithium also happen to have other elements of their life that are better off. Maybe
Yeah, because they're people living in the same area,
yep.
And their drinking water is yep. the only thing they share.
Now, it should be noted, though, that unlike in the U.S., where we can say it's people living in the same area, and a lot of times in the history of settlement in the U.S., people from Scotland settled in one place and people from France in another. When you're looking at a place like Denmark, they're very homogeneous when it comes to genetics. So we would expect that genetically it's probably a wash. But what it could be is that that place that has high lithium, maybe the reason it has high lithium is because lithium leaks out of better pipes that they use. And so, and better pipes are used in more affluent neighborhoods, and more affluent people are less likely to get dementia because they have better health care and better jobs. Who knows right now? But it is an interesting thing. And we do have at least some kind of mechanism of action if we know that lithium can help certain mental cell functions in cases of things like bipolar disease.
I want to find out the study that determines what's wrong with Florida's water. Like, what's causing it shit to happen there?
It's just alligator scales. Alligator scales make you do nutty shit. All right, article number 3. Researchers have confirmed an interesting phenomenon in which people who are asked a question in a second language show more empathy than if asked in their native language. Damien thinks this is false. Seb thinks this is true. And this one is bad science. It's the opposite. People actually show far less empathy. And this isn't a study that just says, hey, guys, look, we've shown that people show less empathy. That's actually a phenomenon we've seen over and over and over again in multiple studies. This one wanted to look at why. Is it due to an emotional aversion to breaking some kind of taboo? Is it because you're detached a little bit from that group? What is it that is making you do this thing? And one of the greatest examples is the age-old trolley question. We've talked about this before. Trolley is going down a hill. It's about to hit 5 people sitting where the trolley's going to end, and they can't see it. You can't yell to them. They're going to get hit. They're going to die if the trolley goes. There's a guy in front of you. If you push him over onto the trolley tracks, the trolley will stop and not hit those 5 people, but you have now essentially killed this man. Do you kill the man? The vast majority of people say no. They don't push the man in front of the trolley. But if you ask them in a second language, all of a sudden, a high percentage flip-flop, and they say, yes, I will. Now, we think the reasoning for that is there is more processing where you're essentially doing it in a less empathetic way. You're looking at it in a more utilitarian way, and you're just analyzing, well, 5 deaths is greater than 1. I know I'm causing this death directly, but I will do that to save those 5 people.
Question, which ones are the illegals? Because this will affect my answer.
That's right. Yeah, so the idea is if you ask these questions in this manner, you get a more utilitarian answer. I think that is super interesting. Because
they're only looking at people who are bilingual.
They're looking at people who have a first language and then a second language, yes.
So like when they ask the people in their native language,
right.
Do they take people who only speak one language as well?
No. They take bilingual people for both because you have to have a control. Yeah. So what I think is interesting is if you do speak a second language, maybe when you have a problem, you should think about asking and answering it in a second language to have a more objective viewpoint where you are subtracting yourself from it. One of the ideas is you grow up speaking your first language. That's associated with the culture you're in, cultural norms that you've been exposed to, your family, how you felt growing up, all that stuff. When you bring in a second language, especially when it's not one that you grew up with, it's one you learned in high school or something later on, you don't have those same emotional connections, and therefore maybe you can make better, more objective choices in that second language.
Now, everybody knows most people on the far right of a spectrum who hate immigrants speak fluent Mandarin. So theoretically, if our papers were to print immigrant stories in Mandarin, we could solve this whole problem.
Well, that actually means that multiculturalism is detrimental to empathy.
Unless you say that they should grow up speaking both languages so they're both your first language. It's only when you learn the second language later on, if you just grow up speaking 2 languages like they do in lots of parts of Europe, then that wouldn't be the case anymore.
Most Trump supporters are polyglots.
All right, and lastly, article number 4. Researchers are now conducting a large-scale study to see if you understand whale language. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is bad science. Congratulations, Damon. You finally won one.
3 weeks in a fucking row.
Finally won an episode here at Madhouse Comedy Club. Congratulations. Indeed, this is actually not for whales. It is for chimps. And this is a super interesting citizen science project you guys can participate in right now as you are listening to this. Go to our website, www.thesciencefaction.com. The first article you see there in the new articles section will be this particular one where you can click on a link and go and participate in a large-scale scientific study. This all started when researchers started noticing that, one, chimps and other great apes use hand gestures and hand signals for communication. This is very basic type of communication.
Yeah, that's because we taught them sign language.
Yeah. Not that. This isn't Coco. Yeah, no. This is their natural thing. They do this in the wild. Now, we know that chimps and bonobos, which are the 2 different species of chimpanzees that are split by the river in the Congo, they separated about 2 million years ago. So they've been separated for a long time. However, researchers noticed that some of their hand signals were the same. They had the same meaning.
The middle finger.
It's universal. So what they thought is, well, this means that maybe, that likely, this hand signal language predates that split, meaning it's at least 2 million years old. What if this hand signal language actually predates the split with humans 4 to 6 million years ago, And therefore, what if we can understand it? And so they're doing a large-scale study where you go online and you look at a video of a chimp making these hand signals. You say what you think it means and how sure you are of what you think it means, and they will take all of this data, compress it, and see if human beings can speak chimpanzee.
I'm picturing your average citizen like sitting in for the study, and the chimp's doing like that blowjob, like miming a blowjob, complete with the cheek motion. Like, I think I know what it's saying, but I don't want to type it.
So I'm going to blow that chimp.
Like you're like Randy in South Park. I know what it is. I just don't want to say it.
Oh, super, super interesting. Congratulations, Damien, on your first win. Congratulations, Seb, on even though you didn't win that particular one, you actually nailed the lithium question right on the head. Very, very good job.
I'm surprised you're not handing him the victory.
Very good job. I should.
For this
I should. Theoretically, I should hand him the victory, but instead
you
I'll just...
an extra point for that.
Yeah, I said I'll just forget your victory.
Have you thought that maybe one of the things holding this podcast back is that a lot of... You know, we're big in Russia,
mm-hmm.
but like, you know, countries that don't respect authoritarian leaders.
They maybe... do respect authoritarian leaders.
In Russia, they're all about it.
Yeah, okay, well, that's why we're big in Russia. Yeah. But we could be bigger in free countries if you were to allow free and open elections. And make me more than 3/5 a citizen on this podcast.
First of all, everybody agrees in those elections that you lost that episode. I'm sorry, I just, last I remember you lost, I call BS. Let's just move on so you don't have to keep constantly making an ass of yourself.
Third victory. I'm... going to take a knee, Colin Kaepernick style.
All right, let's move on to the participation trophy bit of this show. Damien channels a dead scientist.
And now, Damien channels a dead scientist.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Hello, true believers, and welcome to Damien channels a dead scientist, a bit that I'm happy to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
In this bit, I'm going to reach into the unknown. I'm going to reach deep into the ether. Channel the spirit of a dead scientist for the education of all. Bobby, do you have anything you'd like to add?
You're going to pretend to be a scientist. That is somewhat offensive because they're always much better people than you. You're going to pretend to be them. Then you're going to stumble through the explanation. Seb and I will ask questions that reveal that indeed you are not that person because that person would know the answer to these questions. And then we'll cut the show and everybody will be disappointed.
You heard him, our 10 listeners. The same man that ignored your votes gave you one explanation. I respect your intelligence. Uh-huh. I think you'll be able to pick it out. Let's get this started.
Okay.
Ooh.
Shaking.
Spirits.
Of course, you have to say spirits to channel them. That's
come
the way it works.
Me. Uh-huh. Come on, me.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Hey, hello. Who is summoned Edwin Hubble here to the Madhouse Comedy Club?
Wait, what accent
yeah,
is
where
that?
Where are you from?
Where I'm from is not really the question. Wait, I have a good old British accent.
But you're an
intellectual.
You are an American.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps a part of my history that I don't bring up a whole lot is that while going to college at Oxford, I came back to the States with a British accent and was even known to be doing much of my observing in knickers and a cap.
So you're Madonna-ing this whole thing?
I am who I am.
No,
I
mean, Madonna was Edwin Hubbling it the whole
thing. Oh, good point.
I think, as you both of you know, Edwin Hubble should have won a Nobel Prize of science of some sort. Oh, mainly because I fucking revolutionized science.
Well, what exactly did you do? Why don't you let our audience, who maybe not know what Edwin Hubble did, why don't you let them know what you were famous for?
Yes, we'll put a bookmark in my rage, and I'll be back to you, Mr. Sebastian, is it? Yes, I am an American astronomer who identifies as British.
Oh,
let's
God damn
say.
It.
I played a large part in the establishment of the fields of extragalactic astronomy and observational cosmology. I was the first to provide evidence that the recessional velocity of a galaxy increases with the distance from Earth. Some would call that Hubble's Law. Heard of it?
Yes.
Okay, I figured. That's good. That's good.
He's
I'm talking to educated people.
He's getting his PhD in astronomy. I think he's heard of Hubble's Law.
Oh, good.
Not astronomy. Physics.
Yes, I'm just saying I've never heard of Seb's Law.
Oh, that's okay.
I've never... Impress me, bitch.
I forgot how you hate astronomy people. They're the people who can't do physics, right?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I've heard many of this episode. I know what you think of astronomers, and let me say, revolutionize your field, then come talk to me. I discovered several nebulae. Before that, many people thought they were dust or gas clouds, but I discovered they were actually galaxies beyond the Milky Way.
I thought a nebula was a dust and gas cloud.
That is what a nebula is.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry. I'm so hooked up. I'm so filled with rage right now that I'm speaking poorly. Listen, I have to say something in my mind in English, then translate it to how it would say in bloody British.
According to Damien, Edwin Hubble found the Horsehead Galaxy. That's a super nerdy astronomy joke.
I find that talking in a British accent makes me more rational than the things that I say.
It's utilitarian.
But yes, I've actually lived a very interesting life. I was a lieutenant colonel in the First World War. In fact, I finished my doctoral thesis early in order to enlist. During the Second World War, I helped design ballistics, which killed a lot of Jerrys, I assume, Tojos.
Yep.
You know, at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. I spent a good amount of my time at the Mount Wilson Observatory on the Hooker telescope, which I didn't use because I don't pay for that type of thing.
No, you get it
for
free.
No, I used it frequently. Yeah, right. I am a dirty man who enjoys his dirty Hooker telescope. The real name of a telescope, by the way, that was not Hooker, is not a modern term. Hooker, somebody willingly named it the Hooker telescope. I'm just saying, if there's a Dr. Peniscock, you don't name things after him. Yes, and I also, we're in San Diego. I believe I was the first scientist to use the telescope at Palomar Mountain. Mm-hmm. And spent a wonderful time in TJ. Met many hookers that were not telescopes. Right. I was an interesting guy. You got any questions?
Questions for you. What do you think was your biggest mistake? Like, what did you get wrong that was the worst?
I think I could have pulled more tail if I'd adopted a French accent.
Oh, okay.
I think that was a big mistake. British is just easier on the
top. I was going to originally go with your calculation of the redshift, but now I'm going to go with thinking nebulas were galaxies. Boom, Damien! Boom! Seb, do you want to do one?
Who's this Damien character? Is that the rather large Johnson fellow who I'm inhabiting?
Could you explain your law?
Yeah, let's hear about Hubble's law.
Listen, it is a pilot for a space law drama, law and crime drama. Oh,
okay, I see. You were trying to capitalize on the Law and Order thing.
Dick Wolf was signed on for early production.
Mix it with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, Hubble's law, doesn't it just basically just describe that a lot of the light, the universe is expanding, and we observe a lot of the red-shifted light. Thank you, Bobby. Do you have any more questions?
No, I already proved you wrong.
No, you did not. You caught me on some
boom,
sort of on a typo, a fucking typo.
Boom!
All right, well, this is two victories I suppose Damien could attribute to himself. But I mean, I don't know what I'm referring to when I say that. I guess on this note, I'm going to leave. It's a high note. Goodbye, and an ode to Missouri, y'all.
Yes, goodbye, Damien, who is not the scientist you're pretending to be.
All right, I'm back. And of course, Bobby didn't believe it, but I feel like really confident coming back this time. It's like I inhabited an American hero who adopted a different accent.
Yeah, some people feel confident with no reason. Weird.
Trump 2020.
All right. Well, thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction. Go ahead and check out Seb's YouTube page, Galileo's Telescope, Galileo's with an apostrophe, and make sure you tweet us at Faction Science, and please, please, please recommend us to a friend. We see that some of you are doing that, and our numbers are growing, and we greatly appreciate it. For those of you who are not, consider this your PBS Drive guilt shaming, where we say everybody else is paying for this shit and you're not. There's no payment. Just tell somebody who likes science. Download Stitcher on their phone. Make them listen to us. We really do appreciate that. Every time we see our numbers grow, we know we're doing something well. So if you like this show, tell us you like us. You don't need to spend a dime. You just need to recommend us. Or failing that, sign up on another computer and subscribe to us there so we at least think our numbers are getting better.
Hit subscribe and comment on whatever fucking medium you listen to us.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 189, where you learned about how hepatitis E might be being caused by UK pork, how a yarn might be producing your future power source, how cheese changed the shape of the human skull, how lithium in the drinking water might be preventing dementia, why you answer questions in another language with more utilitarian guidelines, and how you can participate in a study to see if you can understand chimpanzee language. Thank you so much for joining us. Please recommend us to a friend and come on back next week for Science Faction 190.
Not only did that Madonna bitch steal my accent, she also stole the song Like a Prayer, which I wrote about blowing Einstein.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.